What's up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL podcast, your weekend edition. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola. Tom, how's life in the Edmonton bubble?
In the bubble, I don't know for sure, Joe, but around the bubble, things are okay, yep. I suppose. What a strange time in our world still. COVID sucks still. Mm-hmm. Never like it was any good, quite frankly. And I'm glad we have hockey. It's nice to be going to the games and kind of getting close to the bubble, but not penetrating the bubble, if you will. And here's the other thing that's getting to me, Joe, and I think you can feel for me here, is it's starting to get cold. And I've seen photos of leaves falling on the ground here in Edmonton, and I'm not that happy, but I'm wearing a cardigan inside right now, and this isn't cool. It's the end of August.
We're running out of golf weather is what it is.
Oh, man.
It's not as chilly here, though. Like, we've had in Buffalo, an extremely hot summer. I mean, normally we'll get, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, even sometimes, depending on like if it's a great year, of like 70 degree weather. But we've been in the 80s and 90s for a while. It did cool down this last weekend to wear like hoodie and shorts weather, which is, you know, one of my favorites. that was definitely that was the gear this weekend. But it's getting hot here again this week. Like, I'm actually looking at it right now, like 81, 81, 81, 80. So I do feel for you, and I understand it, but we, at least here, we've got a couple more weeks of hot weather, it looks like.
I hope we get some hot weather back, because today it's not good. It's disappointing. That's the best way to sum it up.
Well, then just sit inside, watch some hockey.
I can do that. Yeah.
You've got that to do. We've got games. We're recording this on Sunday morning, and we do have games today. You have game 4 between the Avalanche and the Stars. You've got game 4 between the Flyers and the Islanders. And then you've got game 4 also between the Golden Knights and the Canucks. We'll talk about plenty about the playoffs. In fact, I've got a specific question that pertains to the Vegas Golden Knights and what's going on with them. But before we do any of that, we've got to get into what happened this week, not just in hockey, of course, in hockey, but also just in sports in general, with the NBA kind of starting and leading the way on protests of boycotting games. The Milwaukee Bucks, the first to do it, boycotting their game 5 of the first round against the Orlando Magic to protest the police shooting of Jacob Blake, which happened in their state of Wisconsin. You had NFL teams the next day that were canceling practices before I even shouldn't even move on that far ahead yet, because you had Major League Baseball teams that had boycotted games that night to do the same thing. The entire NBA was off. You had stars in tennis that were doing this. And when all of that was happening, was there something triggering you in your mind that was thinking about hockey being played that night? Because there was definitely a part of me that was thinking, man, I don't really think these guys should be playing tonight. Like, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like a good look when you are the only sport that's just going full speed ahead on that night.
Yeah, and this was a big time topic around town too, obviously, with Edmonton being a bubble city. And I think we have to, before we jump on hockey, I think you have to take a step back and we have to understand that, okay, there was already a game in action. There was another game about to be played, and then there was another one that night. These guys are in a bubble. Some of them aren't on social media 24/7. They're getting up from their pregame nap, and they're not turning on their phone. I'm sure some of them got texts or scrolled through, but hockey, the wheels were already in motion for that day. So they finished up their games. And it's kind of like the COVID situation. When Rudy Gobert tested positive that night, that stunned the sports world, Joe. And, you know, the NBA basically shut things down that night. The NHL finished up its games and then waited till the next morning to have a response. And it's kind of similar in that sense. And I'm not here to defend the NHL and say, hey, they totally messed it up, but I'm just trying to understand the reasoning behind it. And I can see, you know, okay, let's finish our games tonight. Let's reassess this. Let's talk to the players. Let's talk to the league. How do we handle this appropriately? And, you know, the closest market in the NHL to Kenosha and Wisconsin is Chicago. Chicago's not in the postseason. No. The Blackhawks couldn't say, hey, we're taking a stand. We're not playing tonight like the Brewers were able to and the Bucks were able to that night. And so it's a little bit different. And the culture of hockey the culture of hockey, it's fair to say it's different. It is a predominantly white league. And there are black hockey players, brown hockey players in the National Hockey League. They're stepping up and the white players are standing behind them, which is good. We saw that with the unified message. So I think to look at hockey and to just lash out at it, that's people talking with their heart and but at the same time there's some value in taking a step back and trying to analyze the big picture and taking a breath and then say, okay, how do we handle this appropriately, respectfully, diligently? And you know what, the response may not have been as fast as people wanted in general from hockey, but I think at the end of the day it was appropriate. They recognized it and they turned off the league for 2 days. I thought it was good. You know, they did it their own way and they put out their message. You heard the Hockey Diversity Alliance coming forward. Yep. So hockey handled it its own way. And I think it did it with respect.
I wonder too about the role the Hockey Diversity Alliance has played in all of this, because I almost want to give the NHL a lot of credit for creating the Hockey Diversity Alliance right after the killing of George Floyd. And because I wonder if this would have happened. I wonder if they would have decided to postpone games to stand with other leaders in sports to basically come out against social injustice against minorities. And I wonder if that would have happened if the Hockey Diversity Alliance hadn't existed. But I think at least the proof is in the pudding for me so far that the Hockey Diversity Alliance wasn't just a PR stunt. Because right. I think maybe that was in the back of everybody's mind, right? Like, oh, the NHL is only doing this because they not only doing this, but a motivating factor would be that they don't want to be seen as, oh, the sport full of white guys. Like, right. They don't want to be looked at that way. And you've had, I mean, you had Matt Dumba, you had Evander Kane say that the league's response on this week was insulting before that they ended up postponing games. You had Ryan Reeves standing with all of the players behind him in a pretty powerful picture thereafter. So the role that the HDA seems to be having in things, like the NHL deserves props. And I think that like they created a organization here that can push them when they might not, you know, be able to know for themselves that they need to be pushed a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. And you saw yesterday, on Saturday, I should say, that the HDA put out a pledge and put out an ask of the NHL. It's a 8-point summary and, hopefully the league listens and reciprocates properly. Yep. And that this is a healthy relationship moving forward that does, create positive change.
Yes. As we transition into more hockey related topics here, and while we are on the HDA, did you see the report that the Hockey Diversity Alliance suggested to the league that for the rest of the playoffs, they change the blue lines to black lines?
And
I got the sentiment behind that, but just on a more almost like silly point of view, if these referees can't figure out what offsides is right now when they're looking at replays, they're never going to be able to determine what offsides is if you've got a black puck on top of a black line. Like, they would never be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the ask. I'm sure it's a pretty simple changeover, honestly. But in the arena, Joe, I know that there's a lot of Black Lives Matter messaging in the rink and around the rink in the bubble and stuff. There's fencing around the bubble and part of the Stanley Cup, let's call it marketing, if you will. I don't know if marketing is a proper term, but the Black Lives Matter we play for logo is around the tarps or banners that they put up around the fencing, and it's a big part of this postseason.
That is another thing that, like, where the HDAs pushed the NHL a little bit. At the beginning, they weren't using the term Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
And the HDA started pushing them towards, like, you need to, like, these words need to be said.
Yeah.
And the league has been doing that. So, like, yeah, that's another example to me of them being on top of it here. Joe DiBiase, Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. Let's get into the postseason itself as the games have picked back up. We had a couple of games on Saturday. We've got a couple of series out west that are interesting. Before we get into any specific series, even though we will be talking about, I guess, the Golden Knights and Canucks here, one story I found interesting this week was that we are still talking about Robin Leonard and Marc-Andre Fleury in the Vegas Golden Knights net. And I think this flared up a couple of weeks ago, of course, when Alan Walsh, Fleury's agent, posted that picture on social media of the sword through Fleury's back, which, by the way, what a move that is if you're an agent.
Right.
And I mean, if I were Fleury, and maybe Fleury is upset and maybe he found it funny, or maybe he's like, oh yeah, my agent's got my back there. Or, you know, maybe he's kind of PO'd at his agent for doing that without, you know, telling him or anything, because it definitely created a story. But I thought Leonard put it very eloquently in a statement that he made this week, where he's like, you know, I've always kind of been the guy that came in and had to beat out the fan favorite. I'm kind of used to it, and I have no ill will towards anybody for wanting their favorite player to be starting in net. He said, he talked about Thomas Greiss being a fan favorite on Long Island. He talked about having to compete with Corey Crawford in Chicago and then having to do that now with Fleury in Vegas. But, and then you had Greg Wyshynski, a story I read a couple days ago from him, talking about how Fleury still should have got the first crack game one when they played Chicago in this postseason. Where do you land on that? One, now where we are, where Leonard has ascended to, he's the Conn Smythe favorite, versus the argument of, well, Fleury still should have got the first crack in the playoffs because he is the face of your franchise. He was your starting goalie, and he deserved a shot at it. Where do you fall in all this?
Well, I understand what Wish is saying in regard to, you know, giving respect to the face of the franchise, and that's Marc-Andre Fleury. But, Joe, in the postseason, it's about winning. And in the qualifying round, they went to Robin Leonard, and he got wins for the Golden Knights. So did Fleury was good too. Don't get me wrong. And this is the good problem that you have in having two number ones. Like, these are two legitimate number one starters in the NHL. I thought it was a brilliant move by Kelly McCrimmon to pick up Robin Leonard from the Blackhawks. But the danger of it is what we're seeing now. And you committed to a guy in Marc-Andre Fleury for a few more years at $7 million, and he has done nothing but win for your organization. He has done nothing but, like I said, be out front for the organization in every capacity here in Canada. I don't know about you guys in the States, but the Mark Stone, Marc-Andre Fleury iPhone commercial plays about 100 times every game, and I still think it's a fun, cheeky commercial. Like, I really do. And so, with Leonard getting the starts and the Golden Knights continuing to win and Fleury sitting on the bench, I understand the frustration of a Marc-Andre Fleury. I think that Alan Walsh's move did what it was created to do with the portrait of the DeBoer sword going through Fleury's back. I think that was, you know, obviously it was deliberate and it did what it was meant to do. And I think Fleury probably knew that it was coming down the pipeline. And I think, you know, he let Walsh keep it up for 24 hours and he was coy about knowing about it, all of that. So it's the battle between the organization and the player. And on this front, it's his agent. I think it's going to create friction. It's going to change something early on in the postseason. Joe, I thought that Robin Leonard, that this would become a situation, honestly. And that we could see Marc-Andre Fleury shake loose in the offseason, and that might be the case. And I think a team might pick him up, and Vegas might have to eat some of that salary of the $7 million over the next 2 years of the cap hit. So I think that for a couple of years, you're going to have a pretty damn good goalie that's going to be available. And I think it'd be hilarious and almost fitting if it wound up being the Chicago Blackhawks who end up with Marc-Andre Fleury.
Wow, that's interesting. The Crawford is a free agent there too, so they'll have some cap dollars to spend on a goalie. Leonard's a free agent at the end of the year too, so they'd have to know that he wants to stay and he wants to come back there, and they could sign him. And like you said, Fleury, someone would probably need to eat some of that salary, $7 million for the next 2 years for a goalie that's going to be 36. I don't think you'd have some teams, don't get me wrong, that I think would be interested, but I don't think you'd have people banging down the door at the same time. So, yeah, definitely an interesting situation to monitor. They are currently the Stanley Cup favorite. Leonard, I mentioned, is the Conn Smythe favorite. Do you think of them as that? If you had the Tampa being up 3-1 and how talented they are, I mean, those would have to be, I would think, the top two. No, that Vegas and Tampa are the rightful favorites because of where they are in their series.
Yeah, I do think Vegas and Tampa are the two teams we're going to see in the Cup final. I thought Boston might have had a chance in that series.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever plagued the Tampa Bay Lightning in the last few years, especially last year, you know, they seem to have gotten over that. That is a championship caliber team, Joe.
Yeah.
But the Golden Knights are too. And they got robbed last year in the postseason. And that terrible, terrible call in Game 7. Absolutely pathetic. Yeah, a pathetic display of officiating. And so I don't think, you know, people love Colorado, and that is a deep team. But quite honestly, the goaltending is not good enough. And I don't care if you're telling me Philip Grubauer would be a difference maker, because I don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, I feel like he could implode at any second. Like, he's been playing well. Like, he has had a good postseason.
And
but I don't know.
Like, is fine too, but there it's. I make this. Sorry, Joe. I'm going to say this real quick.
No, you're good.
I call Colorado basically Carolina West. explosive up front. You know, they have good young talent up front. Strong goal. Strong defense, and mediocre goaltending, and that'll cost you in the postseason.
Yes, that may be their team that should be knocking down the door for. If they don't want to trade for Fleury, they could also take a shot at Leonard in free agency.
Exactly.
That's, by the way, while we're on Leonard, this is more of an off-season thing to talk about. But I have thought so much about, like, if Carolina gave him a big contract, I might not love it, you know, for the long term, but for next year, I think Carolina would be like a sneaky Stanley Cup pick, because you just kind of mentioned like how they are, like, they have a good roster. They can't figure out the net. And if you were to bring in a guy who's been, honestly, Leonard's been a top five, top 10 goalie for the last 2 years at least.
Yep.
And if you were to bring him in, like, I think any team that does that would be smart. But again, you mentioned Vegas. Vegas would probably be smart to do it themselves.
Yep.
All right. When we come back, some more on the Stanley Cup playoffs. Joe DiBiase, Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. First, though, I want to take a minute to talk to you about Built Bar. 18 amazing flavors, including 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. You got your 12 original flavors too: coconut almond, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, banana bread, mint brownie, orange, toffee almond, coconut, double chocolate, and peanut butter brownie. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew, and they're great for healthy conscious guys. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, great for a keto diet. Right now, while supplies last, free cooler with your Built Bar purchase. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and then you'll also get $10 off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Joe DiBiase, Tom Gazzola back here on the Locked On NHL podcast. All right, so we spent some time on the series out west, and we talked about Tampa a little bit as a favorite. Two other series one other series that's going on in the east right now that I wanted to spend some time on. Me and my Tuesday co-host for Locked On NHL, Mike DiStefano, all year, this year actually and last year, so really for the last 2 years, we have not been able to get there as believers in the New York Islanders. And I'm not sure, Tom, if we have ever spent a lot of time talking about them. But I'm wondering where you stand, because we spent almost our entire podcast on Tuesday basically debating whether the Islanders do have what it takes to win the Stanley Cup, because they have this reputation of being the smother you defensively, you know, prevent high quality scoring chances, and then get their goals when they come. But I'm starting to finally become a believer, not even because of Barry Trotz and all of what I just talked about, like what kind of the reputation is right now, but they've got some sneaky good offensive talent. Like, I love Matthew Barzal. I think they've got some good puck movers on their blue line. And you know what? Like, maybe I've shrugged off, you know, Anders Lee and Brock Nelson as a 1-2 center combination in the NHL, but I think they're doing pretty darn good as a 1-2 as your number one and two center. So, where are you at on them? I'm hesitant to go all in, but I'm starting to believe that they can actually, you know, make a deep run.
Joe, the Islanders are one of those teams you look at and you go, well, that's not really a very sexy team. And then you just kind of turn the page on them and look at other teams, quite honestly. Well, it's just something about the Isles that you're just like, yeah, you know, they're all right, but I don't know. We'll see what they can do. And I admire the scrappiness of that team. It's a solid roster. You brought up the good young talent. You know, people in Edmonton were watching Jordan Eberle playing well in the postseason and going, oh my God, thank you, Peter Chiarelli. What a stupid trade that was.
And you've got Barzal, who that was the Griffin Reinhardt trade, right?
Oh, and they were not taking Barzal with that pick if they were keeping. I think it was Erickson Ek, I believe.
Oh, okay.
I was still with the Oilers TV at the time, and Oilers fans wanted Barzal, and I'm like, yeah, they're not even going to bother taking him. So they ended up trading.
Make it worse?
Oh, it's when I tell Oilers fans that, they're just like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, it was not good. Tom, and that trade for Griffin Reinhardt was awful.
You know what that's kind of like? It's similar to, and this is a football comparison. I'm sure you'll be able to keep up with me because I know you're an NFL fan here. But the Buffalo Bills traded the 10th overall pick in the 2017 draft. And that 10th overall pick ended up becoming Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs traded up to get Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, whenever anyone says, oh, the Bills could have had Mahomes, like, I always, like, want to, like, whisper it because I don't want to make anybody, like, upset. But I'm always in the back of my head, like, they weren't taking him anyway. Like, they weren't taking a quarterback there, I'm sorry to say. So maybe it's some version of that, I guess.
It's funny, like, the revisionist history and the what could have been and then the reality, how much of a contrast it is. You're right. That's an even
that one's
more glowing example. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Joe, like, good on the Islanders. I don't think, you know, if they even get past the Flyers in this round, I don't think they get past Boston if Boston makes an amazing comeback or Tampa. I quite frankly think whoever's coming out of the series, and it looks like it's going to be the Lightning, that's who's going to the Stanley Cup final. And those teams aren't – if Boston and Tampa were kicking the crap out of each other and there was injuries left, right, and center, then I'd say, hey, Philly and New York, whoever gets through on that side has a bit of a chance, but that doesn't seem to be the case, really. But you have to give Barry Trotz and the Islanders and Lou Lamoriello credit for really turning that team into a solid team where they're there in the second round of the postseason, knocking on the door of the conference final. But I just think that the other teams that are still in this and the other teams in the East specifically are too good for either the Flyers or the Islanders to get to the Stanley Cup final.
I think I agree with that. While we're on this topic too, of like other teams and like who they could get by after the fact, you've got a bunch of teams that are trailing their series right now. And you've got Vancouver that is down 2-1 to the Golden Knights. You've got the Stars the Avalanche, I'm sorry, that are down 2-1 to Dallas. You've got Boston, who you mentioned there, is down 3-1 to Tampa. And then Philly's down 2-1 to the Islanders. If I made you pick one team that you think has the best chance of coming back from their series, who would you pick?
It's going to be the Avalanche. I think it might actually happen. It was kind of a shock to see Dallas go up 2-0 and being at those games, Joe, honestly, the Avs were generally the better team in large chunks of those games, especially game two, where it was like the Avs in the first period just dominated the Stars, and a couple of power play goals had the Avs up in the first, and then a couple of power play goals for the Stars kind of shocked the Avs, and a couple fluky goals and bada bing, bada boom, the veterans of the Stars, you know, protected a multi-goal lead. And I think it stunned everyone, including the Avalanche. But I do think that series is going to turn around. We saw them, the Avs, winning game three. And I think either that one's going six or seven. Mm-hmm. And I really do feel the Avs have a chance to pull that one off.
I would agree with you. I would have picked Boston, maybe, even though they're down two games. But Yaroslav Halak has not had the series that I thought he would. Statistically, he's been pretty much on par with Tuukka Rask since he got to Boston last year. But he is not having a great series. There was a goal that Andre Palat scored on him from. It was a slap shot. It was an amazing shot, but it was almost from the blue line. And I'm looking at that like, Halak, man, like, if I'm a Boston fan, I really want that save. And yeah. I would maybe be thinking about, I forgot who the AHL kid is who's currently backing up there, who I think his backup led the AHL in save percentage this season, but he's never played in the National Hockey League. Yeah. So I'm not even sure that that's something you could go to. I might be thinking about it if I were the Bruins. But I don't think I could pick them with the question mark in net right now. Funny on them, real quick, before we end here. I'm in a pick'em pool with 13 other guys where we pick each series. I was stunned going into the series. I was the only, and it's not looking good because Tampa's doing great, but I was the only person out of 14 to pick the Bruins.
I took the Bruins too, Joe, to be honest.
Like, I didn't think that was a very controversial pick. I thought that one would have been closer to 50-50.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. The Colorado-Dallas series, funny enough, actually, was, I think, the one that was 50-50 of all the series we picked. Hmm. And that was one I thought going into it, like, Colorado would have been the sexy pick. But apparently not. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's going on with these guys that I'm picking with, but we'll see. All right, Tom, get some golf in if you can before it gets too cold.
I will, Joe. I absolutely will. I have to.
Yes. all right. Thanks, everybody, for listening on today's podcast. Be sure to check us out on social media. I'm on Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR. Tom's on Twitter at TomGazzola. And we will talk to you next week. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast with Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.